Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back of my guest, PMH Atwater, and her book, Near Death Experiences, The Rest of the Story, What They Teach Us About Living, Dying, and Our True Purpose. Welcome, PMH. I appreciate you joining us today, and I must congratulate you on this book. You've taken what was, a lifelong journey with bringing together all of the stories of the people that you have interviewed and taking it forth into, combining that with consciousness research and taking it on into a area that might predict where we are headed and how we're going to get there.
Well, you know, it's my privilege to be here with you. And, I'm very excited about this book. I mean, really excited. Because it's a summary of my work. Yes, that's true. It's also a summary of work I did before I died. You know, I, too, am a near-death experiencer. Died three times in 3 months back in 1977. So I've got the before and after here. Mm-hmm. Before I died back in Idaho, this is where I'm from. I did a lot of research and study and experimenting with and experiencing altered states of consciousness, mystical states, psychic phenomena, and the transformational process, and with thousands of people. For some reason, in this lifetime, I never did anything small.
Right.
You know, I was one of these people that, you know, I had to prove it. You know, very practical, hands-on, field worker. I'm not a scholar. I mean, it's got to be there for me. I've got to be able to see it and trace it. And so I've done a lot of hands-on field work. And, I mean, in other words, don't tell me about prayer. Show me how it works.
Right, right.
And you can do that with bread dough. You know, there's wonderful things that you can do that will verify what we call the invisible world and how it works and these extra skills and abilities we have. So I brought that to bear with near-death work.
Mm-hmm.
And near-death experiences, the rest of the story is a summary not only of my work, but, in all of this, 33 years doing near-death work, over a decade doing consciousness work, finally came to realize and establish that the near-death experience is not any kind of anomaly, but is rather part of the larger genre of transformations of consciousness. So the second half of the book, chapter 16 is sort of that bridge. The key is intensity, and from then on, we're looking at, okay, what is a transformation of consciousness? Why do we have them? Where do they take us? What are they for? And, we're going into biological imperatives, we're going into the threshold experience, we're going into what we really say and feel when we're talking about Jesus, when we're talking about God, when we're talking about religion, when we're talking about our beliefs. I think we have to face all of that and say, here's the core, here's what's happening. We have to look at this.
And in your life, I think your life is one that illustrates something fairly important that I like to bring out on the shows, and that's that our life has a path that we follow. Sometimes we stray off the path, but generally it's a self-correcting system, and you get back on. So for you, who was, your mission and your passion was to, you might not have known it before that, but after your near-death experience. So you had three near-death experiences, and then, as you point out in your book, you attracted, through all these synchronicities, people who would just come up to you and tell you about their near-death experience. That can't be random.
It was spooky. It was spooky.
Right.
I really got to the point where I felt I must be wearing some kind of invisible sign on my back
right.
that said, if you've had a near-death experience, come talk to me about it.
Right.
Because it was just that spooky.
And we interviewed before on your book, the Big Book of Near-Death Experiences, where you had 4,000 cases?
I have nearly 4,000 cases all told of adult and child experiencers.
Right. And so that was like a huge library that you've gathered up. And then in this book, you took what you learned from that library and merged it with consciousness research and merged it with your
own personal
experiences.
you know,
pretty amazing.
When in my third near-death experience where what I call the voice like none other spoke, and
mm-hmm.
that voice told me to do the research. You know,
right.
I would have never chosen to do something like this. No. Anybody who would choose to be a pioneer in a new field of research is nuts. Yeah, they're crazy.
So some of the people I've interviewed said, I've been bleeding on the cutting edge for years.
Yeah, oh boy.
Isn't that a good one?
Can I ever underscore that? But
right.
you know, when I look at that and I look at my life,
mm-hmm.
I've been tearing the world apart since I was 2 and 3 and 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I did my first double-blind study with a control group at the age of 5.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, why not me? Why not me being chosen to be a researcher? I mean, it makes perfect sense because I've been doing it all my life.
Yeah. So we have a path, and sometimes we get an adjustment on the path that's called a near-death experience.
Oh, boy, yes.
And is it an adjustment? Tell us about what is commonly, I mean, we all know a little bit more about what people go through when they have a near-death experience. There's a wide variety of things. But what are the results of having a near-death experience as resulting, how does that change one's life?
Oh, well, let me count the ways.
Sorry.
In essence, what we're talking mm-hmm. about is a person who begins then to shift.
Right.
And sometimes it's not a beginning, it's a right away flip.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm talking about shifting, what I'm talking about realistically is that they begin to realize that now they're living in two worlds, the visible world, the invisible world.
Mm-hmm.
They're now working with physicality and also energy. And that can be very confusing. They're now aware of beings on the other side of physicality.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you tell anybody about that? You know, they become aware of the fact that they can kind of see through things. Or they're now very comfortable with things future. They just kind of know things and sort of fall in step with the future as part of the present. They're very psychic. They're very, well, I consider psychic intuitive. They're very psychic intuitive. They're very innovative. They're very creative. Invariably, they come back knowing more than they did before. They begin abstracting. And these kinds of things are just, it makes the individual feel like they're crazy. You know, they're mm-hmm. like, I'm going crazy, like, who do I talk to? How do I handle this? And, you know, that can be a lot of bumps. But it's sort of interwoven with this kind of shock and this kind of difference and this kind of, you know, what do I do now, is this incredible, overwhelming love and knowing and connection to a reality much bigger than you are, or that, you know, you never thought ever existed before,
mm-hmm.
and you become, you tend to be drawn into service, helping others. prayer becomes daily, hourly. The spiritual world becomes so real that it is part of physicality. So it's not something you do on Sunday. It's not something you say, well, this is my religion.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes what you breathe.
So a window to this world stays open.
Excuse me?
A window to the world that they experienced in near-death, in the near-death experience stays open and influences their world.
Well, in some cases, it's a window that stays open. But for a lot of them, it becomes not a window, but everyday life, air, movement, breathing. It's the way it is.
Right.
So it's what you're living. It's not a window you're viewing through.
Right, yeah. Well, I guess what I'm saying is that an opening between the world stays there, and then your everyday world is influenced by the energy of that other realm.
Right, and it's almost as if the two realms are equal.
Right.
And it's like, how do you tell where you are?
Yeah,
and
that
can
be
a
disconcerting. But one thing is their fear of death goes away.
Oh, gone.
That's
gone.
Almost universal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
have you ever met somebody who still had a fear of death?
I've talked to a couple
in
all these thousands of people that I've worked with. That we're still kind of a little frightened, a little unsure.
Yes.
But that's only a couple.
Yeah,
you
right.
know, and I've all these thousands of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, you know, the fear of death may be the most universal fear we have as a human race. And I like your idea in the book that perhaps, what is it, 4 or 5% of people will experience a near-death experience statistically?
Now that's a conservative figure.
Uh-huh.
Worldwide standard population.
Right.
4 to 5% have had or are reporting a near-death episode. Now, now when you look at 4 to 5%, that brings on a lot of other things, because if you consider the science of fluid dynamics, that science tells us that it only takes 4 to 5% of anything, any group, any condition, any situation to change the whole group.
Right.
If you can change 4 to 5%, you change everybody or everything. So when we're looking at 4 to 5% of the people in the world who've had a near-death experience, we're looking at the possibility here, or maybe the very real reality here, that consciousness globally is beginning now to cohere.
Mm-hmm.
We're coming together. And if you look around at what's happening in the Arabic worlds and throughout our world in total, you begin to sense that, indeed, these people that are crying out for freedom, the right to make decisions, they sound just like near-death experiencers.
Right.
Yeah, and you're beginning to see that when we're talking about the near-death experience, we're not talking about a single phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about consciousness itself.
Right. And you also went back and did some historical study, which you outlined in the book, and it seems that maybe a lot of people who really influenced history had often something that seemed like a near-death experience before they actually developed the knowledge. And you know, it's interesting, if you go, I've studied a lot of biography, and the people who really influenced history almost always realize that it's not their ideas, that they're accessing the ideas from a higher level. Einstein certainly did, and I mean, you could go through almost any great genius in any field, and they're very aware that they access their information from a higher plane. So perhaps,
and if you look back in their lives, almost invariably, they had or probably had a near-death experience as a child.
Right.
The MO is there. The tracking is there. You know, I apologize for using the word MO. I'm a cop's kid. I was raised in a police station.
The MO is there.
I use police investigative techniques as my protocol.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I use words like MO.
Right. Modus operandi.
Yeah,
that's okay.
It's there.
I don't mind.
It's there for Einstein.
Right.
It's there for Mozart. It's there for Lincoln. You know, you can you can go right down Queen Elizabeth the First. You know, you can go right through the
greatest
line.
Queen in history, really.
Yeah.
So you know, so maybe some this experience unhooks them in some way from this third dimensional reality that seems so real, and allows them access to another level of knowing. And that really facilitates them bringing in what they bring in.
Yes, yes. And another thing that you can do a little field work here on is saints in the Catholic Church.
Yeah, well,
or any kind of monk or, you know, priest or this kind of enlightened being. Invariably, they had something like a near-death experience or a spiritually transforming experience when they were a child.
In fact, it's really funny that our less enlightened psychiatrists these days think that if you hear voices, you're schizophrenic. I mean, schizophrenia is only a very narrow band of what, you know, the variety of religious and spiritual experiences that are out there that are commonly accepted. And,
well, that's guidance. You know, if you're hearing voices or if you're feeling a special pressure or or sense or this kind of intuitive prompting, that's healthy. Most people have that. That's normal.
Yeah, yeah. Especially protective. I had a patient the other day from another country who came in and said that, she says, you're going to think I'm crazy, but an actual voice told me that my breast implants were making me sick. And, of course, nobody around her believed her. None of her doctors believed her. I think her significant other boyfriend believed her because he got her up here. But she didn't have much support except that she knew this was true. And when I went in, that was on Thursday when I did her surgery, half of the silicone was gone from her implants. It had leaked out through the back plate over the last 10 years, and she was incredibly ill. And, you know, so in her case and in other people who come to my clinic, a knowing or sometimes a prayer, you know, an intense prayer to get help because they don't know what's wrong with them, I see the spiritual stuff manifesting almost every day in the clinic, getting people in that otherwise would probably die.
Well,
and it's all because they have
that you're
access
doing what you're
to this
doing.
World. Yeah.
And that you're open.
Well, I got sick. I mean, I was the one that got sick, and then I figured out what was wrong with me. And then, you know, that was the path of the wounded healer, which I'm sure you're very familiar with.
Right.
So these voices we hear, pay attention to them.
Oh, absolutely.
Pay attention to them, you know.
Absolutely. Pay
whether
attention to them.
Whether they're external or internal or whatever, if you get, you know, I'm not saying that if voices are talking to you all the time, you might want to go see your doctor. But if you are, if you're hearing these things with wisdom and with knowing, and then when you follow it, they're true, that's just your spiritual protection talking, you know.
Right. Absolutely right. And I'm very much in favor of and a promoter of training our doctors. As you know, you don't get this kind of training. And I think it behooves the individual to start the process. I invite near-death experiencers, for instance, to train doctors about low blood pressure. Because almost invariably, after a near-death experience, the person's blood pressure drops.
Right.
And stays dropped. And there's such a thing as low blood pressure syndrome, where they drug you and all this other kind of stuff. They get very concerned, and we need to train our doctors that this is not a syndrome of any kind. This is normal for us. Please read up about near-death experiences. You know, I have a medical chapter in the big book of near-death experiences,
right,
you know, where I talk to the doctors. You know, I average, for instance, about 58 over 92 for my blood pressure, and that's normal for me. That's average for me since my experience, and I am hardly fatigued.
Right.
You know, I'm
right.
one of these go-getter day and night workers, and
yeah.
you know, I don't
you
fit
have
the profile.
You have the electrical sensitivity, and you have to kind of when you're working with electronics, you just have to kind of give a chance to so you don't blow them out. You know, you kind of have to.
Most near-death experiencers, 75% in my research base. Had electrical sensitivity afterward, that can be very expensive.
Yeah, I know Daniel Brinkley, and he definitely has it. He was talking about
it. Oh, yeah, so do I. Oh, most
that.
Of us do.
Yeah, right.
And one of the things I have learned to do to keep the expenses down is when I'm using electronics or around that kind of item, I relax. I go into the equipment. I introduce myself.
Right.
I allow the equipment to get used to my energy surges. I affirm and tell the equipment, don't be afraid of me. We're going to get along just fine. We're going to work together. I'm not here to bother you or hurt you in any way. This is what we're going to do. I would love to have your cooperation. I bless you. And then I come back into my body, back to regular consciousness. And whenever I remember to do that, you know, the microphone works perfect. I don't have any problems with the electrical lights.
Yeah.
Everything is great. If I don't remember to do that, I can blow them.
Right. I want to give you a little insight that may not, that shift can occur without a near-death experience, but it's always associated with a shift in consciousness. About 1990, I had a significant shift in consciousness, and I broke 10 things in one day. But I found that if I did a healing on them, that they'd come back, including what the transmission in the car broke, and I actually pulled into a service station, and the person said, yes, your transmission's going, but bring it back. It'll probably last a little while longer. Bring it back tomorrow. And I did a healing on the transmission. It was fine. So that healing is what you're talking about, you know, like kind of allowing your energy and its energy to intermingle without being damaging to it. And recently my practice manager started breaking things like that, so she's undergoing a shift in consciousness as well.
Yeah. Well, remember,
was like,
you know, this is what your
really
experience is the
you
rest
know,
of the story is all about.
Yeah,
It's about establishing that what happens to near-death experiencers also happens to near-death-like experiencers, spiritual experiencers, anyone who's gone through a transformation of consciousness. It's the same MO.
I just think it's like a crash course in transformation of consciousness.
Yeah,
you
well,
do it
is.
Much quicker.
It certainly can be.
yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about what is the evidence that the majority of people who have a near-death experience have a shift in consciousness, and what you touched on it earlier, that if 4 to 5% of the population is having this happen, that it may actually be pushing the upward spiral of you know, spiritual awakening.
Absolutely. It's one of those types of shifts that is occurring worldwide, and so we can take we can zero in on just near-death experiences, but those numbers do not include near-death-like experiencers, intensely spiritual changes or spiritual transformation. So if you add up all those other numbers, then you're looking at something so widespread. I just love the science of fluid dynamics because it just zeroes in on this so perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that once energy excites, which is what's happening now, once energy excites, it becomes highly charged.
Mm-hmm.
When that occurs, it cannot be contained. Nothing
can flows outward.
So that's why we're seeing this coherence that's going on. But I really think this is a biological imperative. If someone is going to come up to me and say, what's it all about, Alfie, you know, like the song, I would say it's a biological imperative. We're made for this. We know that the brain is made to have spiritual experiences. We already know that. But when we have these kinds of full-blown experiences, they change the body as well as the mind. It's physiological as well as psychological. We now know, and this is fairly recent, that this can be passed on to future generations. You can pass on what you've learned, how you've learned it. This can be passed on to the next generation. So if you're looking at the whole picture of physiological changes, and by the way, those changes primarily occur to the brain-mind assembly, to the nervous system, the digestive system, and skin sensitivity. So we're talking about huge changes to the body. We're talking, we're more familiar with the psychological changes. But invariably, these people come back smarter than they were before.
Mm-hmm.
So we're improving the human being. When a lot of us have these, they spread because, you know, once consciousness begins to cohere, this thing spreads like wildfire. So more and more people have this. It's going to be a massive tipping point in the evolution of the human species. We're looking at a biological imperative, and if you look back in history, you can see with all of the renaissances that the world has ever known, because there's more than just the European Renaissance. Each time when the Renaissance occurred, there was this kind of upwelling within the population. So you can go back as far as records will take you, and even the oral histories will take you, and you can see this kind of upwelling that occurred in cycles within the human family. And what you're looking at, I believe, is evolution itself and how it proceeds and how it jumps. So when I'm looking at what's happening now, what I'm seeing is that quantum leap that we were promised in the evolution of the human species. It is happening now.
Well, that's what all the major prophecies tell us.
Yeah, just look at the after effects, look at the math in that single book, Near-Death Experiences, the rest of the story.
Right.
It's all there.
And I think that once we make this jump, because we will have better access to the universal mind, we can bring in solutions to problems
at
a much higher rate than we can, like, you know, before.
Absolutely.
This happened.
Well, you're pulling from a larger base.
Right. I mean, not even limited to Earth. I mean, it's probably even greater.
It's an unlimited base.
Because we're not the first planet to get into trouble with overpopulation.
Well, I certainly concur on that.
That's
one.
Right.
Look at Mars.
And it's probably something, it's probably like a test. The nuclear thing is a test, and then as is overpopulation. And if you don't pass these tests, then you probably, you know, have
you get to be
less than
again.
Optimal outcome, you know. Blow yourself up or starve and start all over. So, I'm sure other planets have gone through this, and that's why the prophets come in and tell us that we're living in a very, very interesting time, and one that is quite unique. You know,
if you look at the great shifting, if you're an astrologer, and I am that also, have been since the early 70s, you get a sense of cycles, and especially what is happening now. A lot of people talking about the Mayan calendar. If we stretch that a little bit, or if we move beyond just talking about the Mayan calendar, then we begin to focus on cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And we begin to focus on the kind of massive cycles that have always happened, are happening now, and will continue to happen.
Right.
And what's happening right now is what is called the Great Shifting.
Mm-hmm.
The Great Shifting, in astrological terms, is called a cosmic year.
Right.
That happens every 25,920 years or thereabout.
Right.
And that's what is happening now.
Right.
So if we're looking at the kind of energy involved in that kind of shift, where everything changes,
mm-hmm.
not just a couple of people or a few inventions.
Yeah, it's probably planetary, not just even the
Yeah,
race.
Of course. It's universal.
Right. And David Wilcox said it's not just one cycle. That's one of the cycles. But there's two other cycles.
There's two other cycles,
and they're all coinciding exactly at the same time. There's one that's, I think, 360,000 year cycle or something that is. It's actually the three of them coming together that's so unusual.
Right.
You know?
And it's
so
going
rare.
To take a change in consciousness
mm-hmm.
to be able to write it out.
Right, right. That's true, yeah. I mean, otherwise, it's just, you don't make it. It's kind of like the pinhole you got to get through to get to the other side. And it is, I mean, you talk about this in your Near-Death Experiences book, that there are really many levels of vibrational energy that once you pass out of your body, whether or not you're going to come back, but you go to whatever level you're comfortable in. So,
well, resonate with.
You resonate, you go to wherever
you resonate.
So if, you know, you're lower energy and fear-based and not, you know, really more selfish, once the earth shifts, you may not have a resonance plane to be on the earth with. You see, it's like it may not exist for you here. So,
but that's like
a universal principle. I'm sorry?
It may be kind of different, you know, maybe something
that we can't
really describe.
I think it has a lot to do with vibrational rays.
Yes.
I really do. And that's what, in Revelation it says, two men are standing in the field, one falls down dead and the other's fine. That's about vibrational rates. It really
you
is. If the earth shifts in its vibrational rate and the one man can't take it, they'll fall dead. And it may not
be a near-death
experience.
Right now.
It may actually be death.
Well, you know, the magnetics are getting lower and lower and lower.
Right.
We don't have the magnetics we used to have.
Right.
And the weather is changing.
GPS devices may not work.
Yeah, well, you know, the weather's changing,
yeah.
the soil is
yeah.
changing, the air is changing. Everything is changing. I mean, nothing is staying the same, which is catching a lot of wonderful, wonderful people who really work hard, who really cleave to the ethics and what they believe, a more moral way to live. They're wonderful parents, they're wonderful people, and they're just being really hit hard. And my heart goes out to these people, because if they only had a more open type of philosophy,
mm-hmm.
if they only were aware of a greater reality beyond themselves and what they've been taught,
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't be quite so hard, and they could shift a little bit easier. Now, I'm not saying that all of that is going to make you safe, but I am saying that that does give you an easier way, or at least a better way, to handle that kind of hit.
I think you have more trust.
Yeah.
Since my spiritual awakening 20 years ago, I just know everything's going to be okay. I mean, I just know it is.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll be facing, you know, tremendous challenges, you know, patient bleeding out. I just know they're going to be okay, you know, trauma patient. I just know, I mean, I have a knowing comes over me. I know exactly what to do, and sometimes it's very, very strange and unusual, but I do it, and then they're okay. So this knowing, this trusting.
Yeah, the trust factor.
That is what comes over you, and that's probably what a lot of near-death experiencers come back with, is that kind of what you call vertical connection with all it is, with spirit. And you don't
that
have to reach out horizontally.
It absolutely is there, but how to make it work with life as usual isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
that's
you have to go through some experiences and use it, and then you trust it after that.
That makes a big difference, yes, indeed.
I guess not everybody has the experiences I do as a trauma surgeon.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're getting your verification again
yeah.
and again and again.
Oh, I wanted to tell you a story. I was on call at a major trauma center, and I got a call, and I asked if I, you know, asked what was going on, and they said, well, this person's probably going to die, but I said, okay, well, you still want me to go down there? Yeah, going down. So I went down, and I went into the trauma room, and the guy's hanging up at the corner of the room. He's out of his body, and he starts talking to me.
Ah!
And he says, and he still has, you know, they're still working on him, so he has, you know, he's not dead yet. You know, he's in trouble, and he's undergoing CPR and everything, but he's not, you know, dead. He's not flatlined yet. He's still chaotic in his heart rhythm. And then he says, well, he got hit by a car, which is bad, because he has legs off, and he has facial trauma, which is why I'm there. And we talk, and he says, well, if I go back in, how long is it going to take me to recover? I said, oh, probably about a year, you know. So he goes off and talks to some other people, and he comes back, and he says, I think I'm going to go on. I said, okay, well, best of luck to you. So he goes on, and then the minute he leaves the corner of the room, it goes flatline. Which was interesting to see.
Huh, yeah.
So, anyway.
So you get that physicality. You get that right away answer or proof or verification.
Yeah, yeah. You just have a lot more trust in what there is. In other words, like, remember when we were talking about how your life really had a major plan even though you weren't aware of it? I mean, all
right.
These people coming up to you and telling you about their near-death experiences.
Yeah.
You say nothing of your three near-death. I mean, we all have. I mean, I was spiritually guided to get breast implants. I mean, it was a setup. I was going to get sick because, it was going to happen. Because it had to for me to fulfill my mission, you see.
Yeah.
So your whole life has a plan. And if you've got if you're more conscious, you kind of work together with that plan. You can ask questions. You can, you know, you can kind of figure out what's best to do next and everything, rather than just be batted around by unseen forces like some people feel they are. And so basically, what you get is you get trust in all that is.
That is
knowing
really
that it's always
a big
the best.
Thing. Yeah, that's a big thing with near-death experiences.
Yeah.
I would say with both children and adults, they come back infused with the idea that they're here for a reason.
Right.
They have a job.
Mm-hmm.
They have a purpose.
And
now,
they have guidance.
Interestingly enough.
They have guidance. Well, they find out they have guidance if they stick with it.
Right. But interestingly enough, and we hear it more from the adult experiencers than we do from the child, but you hear it over and over and over again, this grief, and it is a grief, that they were never told what their job was, that their purpose was, and they are really sad about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to tell them or transfer to them what the children say. And the children say, if you don't know what your job is, just follow your feelings and you'll be led to it.
Yeah, I don't
think
that we get to get to it through our left brain.
Right, right.
In other words,
if you just follow what your feelings, what you're led to do, that's your job.
And what you enjoy doing.
Yeah. Well, they didn't say that. They just said, follow your feelings mm-hmm. and what you're led to do,
right.
and that's your job.
Yeah. Well, that's probably true.
And sometimes it's what you are comfortable with or would want, like to do, but sometimes it's exactly the opposite.
Oh,
it's
I know people who really, they didn't, one of the doctors I work with wanted to do anything but cancer. So guess what he does now?
Yeah, cancer.
Yeah, right.
So that's what I mean. Exist. You know, it's not necessarily what you're comfortable with and what you would choose to do. It's like
that's
me,
true.
I would have never chose to be a researcher.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah. Right, right.
But that's what I was led to do. That, well, mm-hmm. in my case, that's what I was told to do.
Right.
And so I did it. I did it without question mm-hmm. because I trusted that voice.
Yeah.
I figured, well, that voice knows more than I do.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
So
this is
it.
This is the realm of existence that is probably outside space and time that that you actually go to in a near-death experience. I mean, that's probably the realm you go to, and then that's also the realm from which this information comes and this guidance. And Buddha said, I'm no different than you, I'm simply awake. And
right.
So this is really, as you say in your book, this is a process of waking up.
It is. It is. It's that awakening to a greater reality
mm-hmm.
besides what you see outside your kitchen window. That there's
right.
a lot more there. And there's a lot more to you than you think there is.
Yeah.
You know, if we're looking at energy and the way things are,
mm-hmm.
it's good to picture in your mind the electromagnetic spectrum
mm-hmm.
and the fact that we only see less than 10% of that spectrum.
Right.
But everything else is there. It's
mm-hmm.
just ultra or maybe extra to our faculties of perception, but it's there. It's not make-believe. It's not magic. It's not somebody that dreamed it up. It's
mm-hmm.
there. It's part of this world. And, you know, that's a big thing that our mind, as experiencers of these kinds of shifts, begin to grasp, that it's not ultra, it's not beyond us in any capacity, it's not higher, it's not lower, it's where we're living now and have always lived.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is our faculties have now opened up and enhanced and accelerated so that we can interact with and be aware of more of what's here.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It's a greater reality. You're right. It's not a different reality. It's just a greater reality.
Well, you know, that's true, but what I'm beginning to realize is it's the reality. It's
right.
not greater
yeah,
or lower or, you know.
Artificial reality.
Yeah. It's what's really here.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, we've only seen and interacted with an only small part of what's here.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of, you know, the rest of it's been here all along. I mean, it's there.
Right.
You know, I touch my walls with such respect and such joy because, they vibrate so wonderfully,
mm-hmm.
and they're so alive, and I'm so appreciative of that wall being there. So I often pat it and love it, you know,
mm-hmm.
as I walk by, and I appreciate the fact that it's interacting with my world as I interact in its world.
Mm-hmm, right. So, we're coming up to the end of our hour here. Would you like to give some contact information for our listeners?
Well, yes, certainly. There's my website,
okay.
www.pmhatwater.com. pmhatwater.com. Yes, those initials really are my name. No, they don't stand for anything. pmhatwater.com. That's my website. And from there, you know, you can get hooked up with my blog and my YouTubes and all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm really anxious for people to do, if they're willing, of course, is to get a hold of the book, Near Death Experiences, the rest of the story, and be with it, stay with it, because it will stretch you. I'm saying things in that book nobody else is saying because I'm backing it up with research.
Mm-hmm.
I'm backing it up with footnotes. I'm backing it up with that kind of verifiable material that it's not channeling, it's not coming from the other side or that expansion of reality that we're aware of. What
mm-hmm.
it's coming from is what I can show you, what I can say on the basis of field work and what I can show you, and then be able to kind of hang with that and realize, whoops, this book speaks to me. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
matter if you're a near-death experiencer. This book speaks
oh,
to
yeah,
me.
Oh, yeah, it really doesn't. You're right, because most of the book's about consciousness and the physical structures that we shift through, you know, the brain, the limbic system, the, you know, all of the different, the pineal gland, all of the things in the book that help us go through and help us shift in consciousness.
Right, right, and go through these incredible threshold experiences, because that's what they all are. They're threshold
yeah.
experiences, every one of them. There's not one that isn't. It takes us to that threshold, that boundary, that knife's edge
mm-hmm.
between sanity and insanity, life and death, mind and spirit. And, of course, there's a lot of mythology about that. There's a lot of symbology about the threshold,
mm-hmm.
you know, the watcher at the gate.
Right.
You know, sometimes people refer to that as some kind of demon or angel or animal or whatever. Whatever the watcher at the gate is, that's fear.
Mm-hmm.
It's always some form of fear. And as you go through that threshold, where you wind up is determined by your heart. Heart is the
mm-hmm.
is the final arbitrator. It, you know, the heart never forgets a thing. It's really our fifth brain, as you well know.
Right.
Around 65% of the cells in the heart are neural cells.
Yeah.
Maybe the major glandular center in the body,
mm-hmm.
but it's producing an electromagnetic field that's, this blew me away, that's 5,000 times more powerful than the brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know?
it has a connection with this realm, too. That's what you have to
absolutely.
Understand. The brain may or may not, I mean, there might be something through the pineal gland, certainly, especially with spiritual sight, but
it's the heart.
But the heart is what is the guidance system.
Right.
How you feel about something is your guidance system.
Yeah, it's really the arbitrator.
It,
it's our guide, our arbitrator.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
I like to go back all the time to this this phrase that most near-death experiencers say after their experience.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them say these same four words, always there is life. Always
right.
there's life.
Always, yeah.
You know, and if we kind of stay with that and let it sink in,
mm-hmm.
then that means there is no afterlife, there is no before life, there is no now life.
No,
there is
only right.
life.
Yeah, life, yeah. And a lot of people are really surprised when they die that they're not dead.
Yeah.
I used to pick up a lot of spirits in the hospital, of course, because people are dying there. And, of course, they'd come and attach, and the attachment was, it felt like something was just, like, right up against you, like somebody was right,
right
there.
They're
and it
real.
Was always on the, I think it was always on the right side. But anyway, so I'd if I couldn't get them off myself, I'd talk to them, of course, but if I couldn't get them off, I'd get some help from my spiritual teachers and the people in my clairvoyance
right.
to do that. But you know, I learned in the 90s that sometimes people die and they don't know they're dead, especially if they've been in a coma for a while.
Right.
You know, they don't realize they're dead, and it's quite a shock to them to even know that they're dead.
Oh, they can go on for years.
Right, right. Which is very interesting.
Explain
so there is always life. That's definitely true.
Yeah, it's always life.
And I told my mom that before she died, too,
because
she was worried about it. I said, no, Mom, you know, you'll be fine. You're going to pop out, and you're going to be, you know, you won't be in this body that has cancer, and you'll be fine, you know.
Yeah.
And I wish we could really teach that and communicate that, but probably we can't. I think it's experiential. I think that's what the near-death experience is. It's an experiential proof of that there is always life.
Well, some things can't be taught.
No, they have to be.
Life has to teach
right?
you.
Right. Yeah.
Life has to teach you. Some things cannot be taught.
Yeah. But you know, I think that I think more and more people are understanding the greater realities and the vibrational levels and the power of love and all of the things that you learn
yes.
when you make these shifts.
Yes, the percentages are picking up worldwide.
Yeah.
And we're seeing the outplay of that, certainly.
We are.
It's not just Facebook. It's not just a youth quake. It's
right.
everybody.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And you know, things like Facebook and iTablets, iPhones and this,
mm-hmm.
this kind of thing make it easier to communicate that.
Mm-hmm.
But this yeah. would be happening anyway.
Right, right. Well, we're coming up to the end of our hour. Is there any other messages you'd like to give our listeners?
Oh, gee, you get me wound up and...
other than
you
get
know,
the book?
when I look at the book,
uh-huh.
that's where I complete my theoretical model on brain shift, spirit shift.
Right.
And if you're looking at how the brain shifts, how the spirit shifts.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking at the more physical brain level, you've got the heart shifting, the emotions, smell, immune system, temporal lobes, frontal lobes,
mm-hmm.
survival instinct, memory. But you've got the counterpart happening spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the counterpart to heart? It's love. Emotions,
right.
it's ecstasy. Smell, it's integrity of memory. Immune system, it's upliftment.
Mm-hmm.
Temporal lobes, it's otherworldly realities. Prefrontal lobes is your empathy. Survival instinct is your awareness that life continues. Memory, that's your knowing. The goal of every spiritual tradition, I don't care what it is,
mm-hmm.
is to release the soul from exile.
Right.
The goal of a threshold experience is to reconnect the soul with Source.
Right, yeah. And once that connection occurs and you get used to living with it, I think that's when we really can bring in everything we need to bring in to fix all the problems we have.
Well,
I mean, I have great faith that
happier.
We're going to be able to do that, especially with the children that are being born. That's yeah, because you look around and there's a lot of problems, but you've just got to have the faith that there are answers. And you know, Einstein said that the solutions to these problems don't lie at the same level of consciousness that created them.
Right, you have to go up a notch.
So you have to go up a notch, and yeah. Well, I salute you for your book. It has really it really is a unique near death experience book because it does take that experience and then take it on into the greater consciousness shift. And also, there's a lot in it about religion and science and consciousness and history. And it's a very...
I tackle what the Christ consciousness is, and I give you the template.
Exactly. Okay. So I applaud you. I think you did a great job.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. That's good to hear.
Well, thank you. Well, next week we have, we have Dr. Charles Skillis, his book, Defeat the Enemy Within. Dr. Skillis is a hypnotherapist here in Atlanta and a spiritual teacher. And then the next week after that, we have Michael Murray, the What in the World Are They Spraying? It's a DVD about chemtrails. And then we have Jeremy Bennett, Archangel Realms, Archangel Meditations. And then on the 13th of August, Dr. Oria Ariel, Earth 2012, The Ultimate Quest. And then actually we're going to start getting into more more interesting stuff that came out of the Truth Convention here in Atlanta. Dr. Stanton Friedman, who is a nuclear physicist, will be talking about his book, Science Was Wrong, and we'll be doing some more exploration of the ET phenomena, which I think is very much connected with this consciousness shift that we're going through. Noetic Science Meeting will be on Thursday, July 21st, next week. On Thursday, our guest speaker will be Dr. Jeffrey Commonor. He'll be discussing 5 Things to Better Your Health, a workshop. He'll be teaching applied kinesiology and muscle testing, some Qigong exercises, and some other energy exercises. I highly recommend if you're in Atlanta, you attend that, because who can't use some help with their health these days? And PMH, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us about your book. I enjoyed the interview and hope to have you back soon.
Oh, I'd love to.
Well, join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show.